So this is Jeffrey Hipschman with Mountain Man Nutrition, and here in Denver, Colorado, doing another podcast. So about 6 months ago, I went to a talk, book signing, presentation with Mark Sisson. Mark Sisson's the Primal Blueprint book writer. He's got a podcast, a blog. He's, you know, 6 different recipe books. You know, one of the main guys in the ketogenic primal exercise world. Really famous guy, and I was excited to go. And throughout the talk, and I even asked a question there, and I had that on this podcast. We talked about it. When I would ask, somebody would ask a question, it was kind of technical or, you know, about diet or, you know, a lot of the questions, Mark would turn to and refer to this lady, Lindsay, who was standing on the kind of on the side of the stage. And Aunt Lindsay would answer the question for the people. And she kind of ran everything. And I was thinking to myself when I went there, I was like, oh, maybe I'll ask Mark to get on my podcast, you know, and that would be super cool. But I was sitting there and watching Lindsay, you know, answer a lot of the questions and talk to a lot of the people, and I understood that she was in charge of the Facebook group, and she ran the this group, and she had a lot of the answers. I knew who I wanted to have on the podcast. So this is the podcast with Lindsay, who works for Mark Sisson, and from all I can tell is the go-to for Mark Sisson. So that's what we're going to do, is we're going to go to Lindsay and see what she has to say. All right, right on. Welcome to Mountain Man Nutrition Podcast. This is your host, Jeffrey Hipschman, and we have another awesome guest. We have Lindsay Taylor, PhD. And if you don't know who Lindsay Taylor is, you must be from outer space, because she is one of the Mark Sisson's main go-to people for recipe writing. She's got her own best-selling cookbooks, which she'll tell us about. And I just want to welcome Lindsay to Mountain Man Nutrition Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me today. I'm really excited to talk about food and keto and all of our common interests.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being on here, and it only took us like 6 months to get you on here, but I really appreciate you making time for us and of course for the listeners.
Oh, no, it's completely my fault that it took us 6 months. We've been crazy busy over at Keto Reset, but yeah, I'm happy to talk to your audience.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And so, Lindsay, let's tell the audience and the people listening a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got into keto, to food, to recipe writing, and a little bit about your history.
Yeah, I took a very non-traditional path to get where I am today. So like you mentioned, I now work for Mark Sisson at Primal Nutrition, and I do all of our keto diet education. I run our Keto Reset community. I also am an endurance athlete, so I do all of our Primal Endurance community management. And the way I got here was very circuitous. I started out as an academic psychologist. So I went to UC Berkeley. I got my PhD there in social and personality psychology. And I was studying stigma and prejudice and goal setting and social interactions and all sorts of interesting topics there, and working as a researcher there. And then I kind of decided academia was not going to be my path. And I took a few years off when I had little kids. My babies were little. And then when I was looking to get back into the workforce, I was thinking about what I wanted to do and thinking, you know, the things I really liked about academia were talking to people about topics I was really interested in and communicating ideas. I liked writing, and I liked the teaching aspect of being an academic and communicating ideas to people. So I started thinking, well, maybe I'll do some, you know, freelance writing and editing and kind of see where that takes me. And at the same time, my husband and I had been longtime followers of Mark Sisson since the very beginning, my husband was really into Mark's Daily Apple when it started, which was kind of like the mid-2000s. We had the original Primal Blueprint book when it came out in 2008. And so we'd been eating that way for years and years. And I was personally really into it at that point because I had just, when my kids were little, had started getting into this endurance sports scene, which for me was just a really crazy thing. It was not like I grew up being an athlete or like a good runner or a swimmer or a bike or anything, but I kind of thrown myself into the world of triathlon, not competitively. I'm not fast. I'm not a podium person. And so I was really into food for health and the whole scene and, you know, the 10 primal blueprint laws and really trying to optimize sleep and lifestyle. And so all these things kind of coalesced. And one day I just said to my husband, I think it's time for me to start looking for a job again. I think I'm ready. Literally like 2 days later, I went on Craigslist and there was an ad for a primal paleo health and fitness writer. And I was like, yeah, this is like all my boxes, right? This is probably something I could do. Thinking it was just some small scale blogger or something who wanted some freelance work done. And it was totally Mark. It was Mark Sisson. And I had, of course, I didn't have any idea. So I answered the ad, talked about my qualifications and my interests. And then Mark's co-author on the Primal Endurance wrote back, Brad Kearns, and said, hey, I'd love to talk to you more. And I lost my mind and my husband lost his mind. So that was like Thursday. And then by Monday, I was working for Mark.
Wow.
So it was super crazy. And I just, and then, you know, worked for him for a couple of years on the editing side and the writing side. And then he started, diving more deeply into keto, probably about 2 years ago. And he and Brad asked me if I would want to kind of come along for the ride and check out this keto thing and learn about it with them. And I was like, yeah, that sounds really interesting. And fast forward to where I am now.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, great story of how you just connected with Mark.
Yeah.
In the blind, good for you. So, did you go from primal to full keto, and do you stay there, or do you jump back and forth in and out of ketosis, and what's your process there?
Well, so for me, the reason I started doing primal, you know, 10 years ago and stuck with it all this time has really always been about wanting to feel as good as possible. I have a longevity goal, but it's never for me been about like a specific acute medical issue. And even though it's, you know, I mentioned my sports and it is for me a lot about being fat adapted and using fat as fuel and getting off the carb roller coaster in my sports, you know, I'm not a competitive athlete. So for me, it's always just been about doing as much as I can in my life and feeling as good as possible on a day-to-day basis. So I'm not really into, you know, micromanaging and trying to optimize every variable every day. I'm really just about living a healthy, happy life. So for me, I went into keto and I did it pretty religiously for probably about a year. And then now I just kind of eat more intuitively. So I still consider myself keto because I eat very little fruit and I don't eat any added sugar and I don't eat grain. So if you were to track my food on a day-to-day basis, it's probably well within the keto range, probably 6 days out of seven. But for me, because I don't have a medical need to be very strict, for me, in terms of living a healthy, happy life, part of that is kind of like the mental health aspect of being flexible and intuitive with my diet now. And because I've been doing it for so long, I feel like I know how to do that. So I would say that, you know, I was really strict for a year or so. And then probably for the last 8 to 10 months, I've just been kind of probably in and out of ketosis.
Awesome. And I think that's a super healthy, mentally, emotionally way to do it. You know, if you're, and only certain type of like super A personality people can track every single day, every single morsel, every single, you know, ounce of food and enjoy it and not make it a super stressful, you know, environment for themselves, mm-hmm. You know, and I really coach, especially like the scale, right? Don't get on the scale, mm-hmm. Track your weight more than once a month, you know,
I agree.
When you first, especially more when you first start, right?
I mean, I agree with that. I really feel like people get bogged down in the weeds, and sometimes you don't even really think about what is it that I want my life to look like, right? So you think about these kind of smaller picture goals without taking a step back. So, you know, I do think that for some people, if it's your personality type to, I call these people optimizers, right? Like they want to get every little variable dialed in perfectly, and they love the tweaking and the measuring and the, well, you know, if I felt like a 9.7 today, if I did this, could I feel like a 9.8 tomorrow, you know? Right. And if that's your personality type, great. But I think a lot of people do not have that personality type, but I think we kind of glorify that personality type. And so, you know, people get sucked into that. And the idea of doing things, quote unquote, well enough, I feel like in our society is kind of treated like a cop out, or like you're doing a lazy version, or are you even really trying, bro? Right. You know, and for me, I feel like that is really unhealthy. So, you know, of course I see absolutely where for a lot of people in a lot of situations, you know, tracking and weighing and measuring your food and maybe weighing yourself, certainly maybe measuring your glucose and your ketones can be an important part of the process, of the learning process. But I feel like my constant message is like, I'm always trying to give people permission to not worry about stuff so much.
Right, right. And I think there's a time and a place for it. Like, hey, if you, you know, if you've been going for, you know, 6 months to a year and you're really cruising along, right, and you're low in your blood sugar, and I'm talking about somebody, say, with type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetic, and you know what, they want to add maybe a half apple with some nut butter to the regimen because they just love apples and they miss fruit. Well, mm-hmm. I highly recommend that you eat, you know, test your blood sugar, your glucose, and then eat the apple and then test for the next 2 hours, mm-hmm. right? That way you know. I don't really necessarily recommend you test 4 or 5 times a day just to, you know, every time you eat. I think that can just be too overwhelming and most people are not going to do it. But if you have a specific food or you want to try something out and see if this is going to be okay for you, then, you know, do it. If you want to try a Mark Sisson, you know, bar and see what it does to you metabolically, because you want to know if you can have that, trying to reverse type 2 diabetes, well, test that, you know, like do it specifically for a specific reason. Don't do it just to, you know every single number, every single minute. Right.
Right. And I mean, I obviously, you know, someone who's trying to reverse type 2 diabetes is someone who's in a situation that's different than mine where, you know, measuring might make more sense in a lot of situations and intuitive eating might not be a place where you're at yet. But I still think that for everybody, it's really important to think about the ways that the food choices you're making are also impacting the everyday quality of life. You know, I say mental health, but you know, mental health, I don't just mean like mental health disorders. I mean how much you are liking your life every day. And if you're finding that what you're doing right now is maybe working because your blood sugars are coming down, but you're hating it, you know, start to just ask, are there ways that I can adjust these behaviors to make my life more enjoyable? And sometimes the answer is no. Like if you're really in a place where you are starting, you're digging yourself out of a big hole, you may have to really do these things that aren't necessarily the most enjoyable for a while. But ultimately my goal for everybody is to get to a place where you can find at least a happy medium, you know, between kind of the micromanaging and the living your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I ease people into it as well. Like if you're a full-blown diabetic, I'm not going to pull every single carbohydrate out of your diet and have you go strict keto in the first week, right? Just like you guys coach, you know, you slowly, gradually bring people into ketosis and then find out whether, you know, how they're doing. I think very, very few people can make that switch right away. So, you know, let's get the bread out of your diet first, you know, mm-hmm. and let's add some leafy green vegetables. You know, okay, now no fast food anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Let's step people down from, you know, the sad American diet into slowly into a ketogenic state. With that being said, I got some people, it takes me 3 months to get off bread, mm-hmm. you know, different clients. And I get that. Have you, with your coaching, had, and what's your experience with like carbohydrate addiction? Like people who are just like so addicted that they, you know, drive from fast food to fast food store eating, you know, that kind of food, or, you know, if they have bread within 100 yards of them, they're just going to wander over to it and eat it no matter what. Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
Well, I should mention that I don't do one-on-one coaching. So I just do the kind of like this big higher level, not higher level, but bigger scale, bigger groups, you know, education with Mark. So I don't have the luxury of working with people in the sense of on a one-on-one basis. I say, okay, here's our strategy for this week. And then you're going to come back to me and say, okay, this worked for me and this didn't. But if the question is, you know, do I see there are some people, right, who can just rip off the Band-Aid and they just go straight to like, okay, I'm all in. I buy everything you're saying and everything's great. There are those people. Those people are not the majority by any means. What we really see is a spectrum of people who, you know, they do really well in some areas, some things just kind of click for them, and then they struggle in other areas. And actually, we were just having a conversation this week about this, these, you know, the people who I feel like are probably a lot more present than I see, but are, you know, maybe kind of hanging out in the background, are the people who are really struggling with giving up these foods. And it's obviously a huge problem because there is both a physiological and a psychological component to choosing these foods, right? Yes. And so it's easy for us as coaches or me as an educator to explain the physiological basis for why, you know, X, Y, and Z might be better choices for you than A, B, or C, right? And why I can support you in this way by saying, you know, at the beginning, eat lots of calories and lots of fat while you're trying to drop your carbs. You know, don't do all the restriction at once. That's an approach I take where I say, you know, as you, if you're going to dramatically drop your carbs, I do not also want you to dramatically drop your calories and add intermittent fasting. I want you to right. Do one type of restriction at a time, right? If that's what you're going to choose. And so the physiological piece is actually like, you know, that's the easier piece by far, right? Not that it's quick for people, but that it tends to be easier to manage, and you can experiment with the variables more easily in terms of, you know, macronutrient ratios or intermittent fasting schedule if you're, that's what you choose to do. The emotional part is obviously a lot more difficult, and we don't talk about it a lot in our group, only insofar as it's you know, it's just so highly individualized. Honestly, when I talk to people who are really struggling, I really encourage them to go find a therapist who is really well-versed in this, because the emotional issues can be so varied and they're also very hard to untangle on your own. And also, like I said, because I come from a background in psychology, I was not a clinical psychologist, so I was not seeing patients, but I'm just a really big fan of people asking for help.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I, you know, being from the background of and you don't know this, but alcohol and drug addiction, I talk about mm-hmm. it on my podcast, as well as food addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm definitely had counseling and saw a therapist for several years over food addiction, mm-hmm. you know, and still struggle with it today. If I, for instance, for me, if I get up into the 80, 90, 100 carb range, even if it's from nuts and sweet potatoes mm-hmm. or from a half an apple or whatever, there's a point there where I just start craving food. Mm-hmm. You know, if my carbs get just a little bit high, I crave, bread and cookies and cakes and I have to deal with that. And it's certainly a constant struggle with me, even somebody coaching. And I like to talk about it because it's a real thing. Even for somebody like myself who used to be 360 pounds and an 8.9 blood sugar, you know, on my A1C, now I'm down to the low fives and, you know, 240 pounds. So it's doable, and I like to make sure people know it's doable, but it's also a battle to fight that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's real, and I really encourage people to get a nutritional therapist, a nutrition coach, a psychology coach, whatever it takes to get you over those humps, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, well, thanks for sending people to other, you know, to ask, letting people ask for help, you know, give them.
No, I think that everybody, you know, everybody can use support. And the other thing is too, you know, you mentioned that it's still a struggle for you. And I think that one of the things that is, you know, kind of pervades diet culture in general is that people feel like, oh, what, you know, the messaging you get is that, oh, once you get your food dialed in and you figure out, you know, what to eat, like just figure out what's a healthy diet, then it'll be kind of smooth sailing from there. But it doesn't address the mindset that comes with having to adjust your diet. So if you have now realized, for example, that you don't do well above 80 or 90 grams of carbs, which is, you know, a great realization for you, I would still expect maybe, you know, there's still going to be a struggle when you go to parties, not you, but the general you, right? When you go to parties or when there's, you know, this messaging that you should just, you know, oh, let loose and enjoy yourself. So there's going to be a continuous conflict between, you know, what you know is best for you and kind of the pervasive cultural message. And I think people don't expect to experience ambivalence continuously, right?
Right.
And I think there can be a lot of ambivalence, even when you know what's best for you, even if you obviously see the benefits of eating in a certain way, or and you know how much better you feel if you make this choice instead of that choice. There can still be a lot of ambivalence. And frankly, there can actually be kind of, I actually think of it as like a mourning, where it's like mourning, mourning, where it's like, oh, I see all these other people and my perception is that they can eat whatever they want and I can't. And that can make you feel sad and left out. And you have to process those feelings and understand that, you know, probably your perception of other people is not accurate. Right. But there's so many emotions tied up around food, and especially emotions, I think, tied up around having to do things that feel different from what other people, quote unquote, have to do, that processing those can be really complicated.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it's because we're social creatures, right? We love to go to dinner with people. We love to get in groups and have food. And every function we go to is food is going to be the main thing. Every single holiday, the food is the focus. So we really have to, in my case, I really coach being prepared, mm-hmm. you know. For example, we're Buddhists, so we go to a Buddhist center, and there's always food, and people always bring chips and popcorn and like little chocolates and things like that, mm-hmm. right? And so I bring salami or meat or like little things of cheese,
right?
Because if I don't have something there prepared, you know, and all this food around, even if I'm not hungry. You know, and I just had a full meal, all this food and everybody eating will trigger me if mm-hmm. I am not 100% prepared to have something there for myself.
Totally.
So I think being prepared, around the functional food thing, is awesome. And really the way to go. And then also to have your spiel ready, because right. when Aunt Lulu, gets her feelings hurt because you're not eating her apple pie and you give in, you know, you really need to have that conversation prepared, I think, for her. Be like, you know, I've had your pie a million times. I love it. It's the most amazing stuff. But I know, you know, I love it, but I just have to make different choices right now because of my goals and the lifestyle I'm living. And I really hope that you would support me in that. Mm-hmm. You know, like that kind of conversation, I think needs to be pre-practiced.
Yes, absolutely. In social psychology, we call those having scripts for different situations. And you're much more likely to make choices that you don't want to make if you don't have your script prepared. You know, it's when you're feeling unprepared. I like to flip it and put it on the other person and say, oh, Aunt Lulu, you know, I love your pie and I know you love me and I know you want me to feel as great as possible. So I know you'll understand why eating pie makes me feel not my best. And I know you want me to be my best. And then she has to be like, no, I'd rather you eat my pie. And then that makes
me look like I want to feel good about myself and my pie. I don't care how you feel.
Well, and if Aunt Lulu is willing to do that, you should probably just walk away from Aunt Lulu.
Right? Why go over there anymore? I get it. So let's switch gears really quick because you're you've written all the recipes for the recent Keto Reset cookbook. Is that correct?
Yep. So I helped with the recipe development for Mark and Brad's book, The Keto Reset Diet, that came out in 2017, I guess. And then since then, we've written, Mark and I have written two other cookbooks that go along with the Keto Reset Diet. So the Keto Reset Instant Pot Cookbook and the Keto Reset Diet Cookbook. And then I've also just recently published with my friend Layla another cookbook called Keto Passport that's all recipes from around the world. It's a curation of recipes from different regions, some of which were kind of keto friendly to start with, and then some of them we had to really adjust to make them keto friendly. But this all goes back to what we were talking about before, which is, you know, kind of the psychological aspect of making a lifestyle change around food, and one that's maybe not, you know, traditional, or maybe it's different what your friends are doing, which is that, you know, a lot of people, when they adopt a new way of eating, they feel deprived because they think about how much they can't eat. And really, I genuinely mean this from the bottom of my heart, I never feel deprived eating either primal or keto, because I only eat foods that I truly like. You know, and Mark's been saying that for years too, like enjoying your food is a really important part of the human experience, like you just said. So, you know, I really love writing these cookbooks because I want to show people that you are absolutely able to eat a variety of foods, different flavor profiles, different styles of cooking, you know, foods, if you're from a, you know, a different culture, foods from your culture that can still kind of live up to your standards for what you want your food quality to look like, your macronutrients to look like, although we talk about it in terms of restriction, yes, you are choosing not to eat certain foods and choosing to eat others instead, but there doesn't have to be deprivation involved.
That's right. Yeah. And that's super important. We always talk up the avocado and how healthy it is and the good quality fats. And I get so many clients who hate avocado, and I'm like, don't eat it. Right? It's okay. Move on to something else. And there are so many delicious flavors, food styles, food types that we can play with. And it's obvious because the cookbook industry is going crazy with awesome recipes right now. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into cooking? It's just because you're like a really focused mom and like, I need to be prepared in food and cook at home. And, or did you have a history in it, or your mom teach you how to cook in the kitchen, or your dad in the backyard, or what happened there?
No, I'm very sorry to my parents, but I grew up eating a very traditional Midwestern diet, a lot of, scalloped potatoes out of a box and frozen carrots and sloppy joes on white buns. So I definitely grew up eating a very traditional standard American diet. No, I just got into cooking myself when I branched out on my own. I moved to California. So I grew up in, like I said, the Midwest, but I moved to California. So there was just this abundance of delicious, fresh produce available all the time, which was very different from my, you know, snowy Midwestern upbringing. And so I just really got into cooking on my own. And then when my husband and I went primal, you know, 11 years ago, it wasn't like it is now where there are a million cookbooks and blogs and, you know, products out there. We were by far the weird ones back then. It was early days, even of paleo, really. So I just started cooking because it was just our best option. And then I just really discovered I loved it. And then when I started doing my athletic stuff, you know, 7 years ago, I really started to see food as fuel, not just as, you know, something I had to do for health or as a way to try to control what my body looked like. And so I really cared so much about what I was putting in my body in a way I never had before. And so I just started playing around with it. And, you know, it wasn't until, you know, when I started working for Mark is when I started doing it, you know, quote unquote, professionally. But really, I'm a completely home trained chef who just really likes eating and likes trying things and likes Pinterest.
Awesome. And that's inspiring too, because so many of us have that Midwestern, Southern background of fried fish and, you know, biscuits and gravy on the weekend and that kind of cooking. And to change that stuff, is so important. So I am I really talk up the whole real food cooking, mm-hmm. not so much processing my own food. For instance, mm-hmm. I've tried the keto breads and the keto cheesecakes and the mm-hmm. Blah blah blahs, and it's a slippery slope for me. If I make keto bread, I pretty much eat the whole loaf.
I agree. I'm the same way, and I don't even feel like I'm a person who really struggles with carb addiction. You know, beyond the fact that it's just, you know, it's a physiological trigger for everybody. And I still agree. I don't prefer to try. I don't like keto pancakes. I don't like keto muffins. I don't like keto cookies. I have, you know, I write a couple of those recipes in the Keto Reset cookbooks because our publishers asked for them because people enjoy them. But for me personally, I just don't even go down that route because I really want my food to be a vehicle for nourishment.
Right.
And I don't find those foods to be nourishing. And I know that, I mean, sound like such a nerd, but I really want, like when I eat, I think like what I appreciate about my food are A, the way it tastes, and B, I really see eating as an act of self.
Awesome.
As the most important way that I show love to myself. Mm-hmm. And so the nutrient dense food into my body that I can. And does that mean I never like eat anything that's not the healthiest? No, of course not. I am still a human being, but I don't want those things to be a major part of my diet because I want there to be plenty of room for all the things I really want to eat, which is the meats, the vegetables. I do love avocados. So I want those things to be the predominant part of my plate by far.
Got it. So Lindsay, being I'm a family man, right? I have two kids, a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old, and then the wife. And we actually have my wife's cousin staying with us for 6 months from Siberia. So we have a full house and a full family. And you know, I really try to eat the grass-fed butter, the grass-fed beef, and even get a little high-quality lamb in the house at times. But when you're feeding so many people and you want to be the highest quality,
yeah,
and, you know, we have to pay the rent and all that stuff, how do you budget? And are you big on eating the highest quality, which my guess is you are.
Yeah, we are big on eating high quality foods. And we spend a lot of money on food. Like, I'm not going to lie about that. We do spend a lot of money on food. And I mean, obviously the kind of traditional answer is, well, you spend all this money on food and then you don't have to spend it on medication. And that's totally, totally true. But still, if someone were to come and look at my food budget, they'd be like, wow, you spend a lot of money on food. So the way I do the couple things I do are this. One is that we invested in a deep freezer years ago, and we every year split a cow with mm-hmm. my husband's family. So that gives us a lot of meat at a reasonable price. And it's a, you know, pastured cow. So if you can buy, obviously buying in bulk that way can be cheaper, but it's not like meat is never going to be high quality meat is never going to be inexpensive. You know, I go to my local grocery store is a Whole Foods, so I'm lucky about that. And we are able to get a lot of local stuff there. And so I don't do much meal planning ahead of time because I usually eat whatever's on sale. Right. So I buy whatever's on sale at Whole Foods. Uh-huh. Again, like I'll buy twice as much as I need and throw something in the freezer. Like I said, I'm really lucky where I live in the Central Valley of California now that I can buy very reasonably priced produce at my farmer's market every week. And so I buy most of my produce from my farmer's market. And honestly, my husband thinks this, I'm silly, but every week I pick like one splurge item at the farmer's market, whether we have like a wonderful lady there who sells, heritage pastured pork, but it's super expensive. So I'll buy like one thing from her every other week, you know? But it's getting a lot cheaper now. Like, I don't know if I know everyone won't have access to this, but as you and I met at a natural grocer's, we don't have a natural grocer's, but we have Sprouts, which is similar. Yeah. And I know that both places now, like the cost of, you know, Vital Farms eggs has come way down just in the past year, at least where I live. It used to be $8.99 a dozen. And now I can often find them for $3.99 or $4.99 a dozen.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, there's more consumer demand now. The price keeps going down. But honestly, I just allocate a lot of money to my food budget. I shop on sale. I can get organic produce cheap, but if I couldn't, I would buy frozen organic produce where I to supplement, and I would, you know, stick to the Dirty Dozen list if I had to start making choices about that. And the other thing is, you know, my children do not eat keto. My children eat mostly Primal, but like my kids eat some grains, still like sprouted grains. We have a zero tolerance policy for any kind of canola oil, sunflower oil, like any of the refined seed and vegetable oils. But my children eat a lot of fruit. So my children eat a little bit more variety than I do. And then my husband does potatoes. And so that, you know, because they'll, because I don't have to feed our entire family just meat, it's a little bit cheaper. But yeah, it is, you know, it's a choice that my husband and I have made to invest a lot in our food budget.
Yeah, I'm. That's great to hear, because we're the same way. Is and I bargain shop Whole Foods, Sprouts, and National Grocers, like whatever's on sale. And it's a great way, and I love to tell people this, it's a great way to always be eating something different, because mm-hmm. something is always on sale different every week.
Exactly.
You know, and lucky enough too, Sprouts is grass-fed beef is always on sale.
Yeah, like, Sprouts is a really good place to get inexpensive higher quality meat.
Yeah, it's constantly going on sale. So when it does, you just grab, you know, 4 or 5 pounds instead of the two. And then, you know, in 2 weeks when that's gone, it's back on sale.
Mm-hmm. You
know? So I super shop all the stores. And then, you know, Costco even has some organics and vegetables and different things like that, that I can get on sale as well.
Yeah, Costco's great now. Actually, Costco has a lot of options now. I feel like every time I go to Costco, I find something new. You know, and same thing, like you have to be smart about using your freezer, not letting food go to waste. That's a big thing. You know, we eat tons of leftovers. So you kind of have to embrace leftovers. If that's not your thing, you got to figure it out.
Oh yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, things like, I mean, we make our own bone broth. So there's things that you can make yourself and really stretch things. So you don't have to buy everything. Like people who buy bone broth, I'm like, no.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Not time consuming to make, because you just put it in your slow cooker and 2 days later you have bone broth and you could kind of dip out of it throughout the week when you're cooking it. You know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And then you can turn some of your leftovers into soup, and then you can use some of it to make, you know, the bone broth in the bottom of your slow cooker next time, and then you strain that out. I mean, yeah, that's one thing that we are really strict about in our house, or me mostly, since I do basically all the cooking, is like nothing goes to waste in our house.
And so we're on the topic of like, not by like, because I eat so much bone broth and meat, I don't really buy collagen and I don't put it in my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty popular to buying the collagen, but that's something that's already in my food. Mm-hmm. Like some people for blood sugar regulation will buy cinnamon pills or ginger pills and things like that. And it's a supplement that they're taking, they're eating, where I tell people to stop spending money on that and put cinnamon in your food.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now, you could put paprika, cinnamon, and some cumin is one of the most delicious combinations,
mm-hmm.
Spices that you can possibly have. And you can use it all the time and you don't need to buy a separate pill for that. Same thing with ginger, you know, ginger this and ginger that. Well, just cook with a little ginger. You know, like these really nutritious, medicinal, healthy cooking ingredients really need to be in your food and not necessarily as a supplement, because it's a big money saver if you're going to cook with it anyway, right?
Yeah, I totally agree that you should try to get as much as possible from your food. But that entails also eating a lot of variety, right? Which, you know, I think a lot of keto people fall into a trap of eating the same three things over and over. And we say that too in our group, like if that's something you want to do, but we usually expect that one of your three things is going to be a giant salad that has like 8 different types of vegetables in it. So,
right.
but yes, I mean, I think that, you know, making your own bone broth, using fresh herbs and spices, using dried herbs and spices. And then the other thing that you were kind of hinting at with the collagen is using the more unusual cuts of meat, right? So, and that's another way to save money. So, you know, buying the fattier cuts of meat, the ones that aren't as conventionally attractive when you look at them in the case, right? So, you know, things like oxtail, and we eat a lot of liver in our house, which, you know, even my kids eat liver. We eat kidney, mostly me. I'm the big organ meat person in our house, but
I'm still hiding it because my kids are not adapted as of yet.
Well, my 11-year-old will happily eat chicken liver pate. My little one, I still have to kind of, I'll do like beef and kidney together, and I'll kind of chop it up, and he'll be like, "What's this piece?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
Right.
You know, but he knows that I'm always trying to sneak stuff into him. I'm not actually sneaky, because I want him to know what he's eating, but he knows, sure, I'm always putting stuff on his plate. But, you know, so, and that was another reason that I really liked writing Keto Passport, was because my co-author, has a really extensive palate, and her mom is Korean. And so she's, you know, kind of grew up eating a much different, you know, her childhood experience was very different than mine. Right. And so, you know, after becoming Primal, but then also working with Layla, I started doing things like oxtail and those type of, you know, things where it's, you're eating connective tissue and you're reusing the bones and meat on, I never grew up eating meat on the bone besides occasionally chicken breasts on the bone. You know, so, you know, all these things, when you start to get into this more primal paleo ancestral lifestyle, and then if you take it into keto, there are absolutely ways to do this. I mean, I eat probably more well-rounded now in terms of variety of food and, you know, getting into Kate Shanahan's four pillars of health and all that, than I did earlier in my paleo days, when I was technically eating, you know, more different types of food, in terms of I ate more fruit and I ate sweet potatoes more often. But I think that my diet is actually quote unquote healthier now in terms of the nutrients and how rich it is than right. It used to be.
And that's a learning process. Yeah. We learn that as we go. And I think I have a lot of people collecting recipes now because they want that.
Right.
You have a recipe for this, or, hey, I kind of want to add this to my diet, or this or that. And, you know, even if it's not my recipe, it's like, okay, hey, I found this one in this cookbook. This is, maybe try this. I haven't tried it yet because it's not mine, but, you know, give that a shot. And I think the longer you're in it, the more you search that out. And I've seen more people become foodies because of this process.
Right. I agree. Because it feels like at first, if you're coming from a standard American diet, you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much I can't eat, which I obviously, having been in this world for, you know, 10, 12 years, don't feel like that anymore. But I remember feeling that way. But no, it's like, I like to try to frame it for people who are new as an opportunity to branch out and try different things. You know, falling back on spaghetti and ravioli every night, which is what we used to do before my husband and I, when we were, you know, young and poor and not before we were paleo, is easy, but it's so boring. You know, our food is so much more interesting and tasty now than it used to be.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really interested in this Keto Passport cookbook because I am, you know, I've lived in a few countries and many different states and in different places. And I love, you know, food from all over the world, and it's exciting. I just got a recipe for a keto sweet curry from South Africa. And she had us over and cooked this meal, and I was like, send me that recipe. I have to have it.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely try this Keto Passport cookbook because I haven't seen it yet, so I'm excited about it. Do you use, and this is my big thing, because as a chef, like wine, you know, wine butter sauces was everything, you know, and now I don't want to use wine in the cooking because of the carbohydrates and this and that. So I actually use the bone broth for my deglazer in the base for 98% of my sauces now.
Yep.
Are you utilizing that?
Yes, I use a lot of bone broth in my cooking, and then I just add, you know, lemon or apple cider vinegar usually. Or actually, I actually really like coconut vinegar for adding a little bit of that little hit of acidity. But yes, I don't like opening a bottle of wine to cook with, because I don't like wasting food, like I said, and I don't want to drink a bottle of wine. Right. So I don't use wine that much in my cooking. Although, I do have some recipes where I've written wine into them. And then we always, like, we have a Coca Van in the, in the cookbook, but we always provide an alternative because really bone broth works. It's not going to be the same. And that is another thing you need to understand if you're going to be going, you know, primal paleo or keto. If you're trying to recreate recipes, you know, faithfully, it's often not going to be the same, right? Yeah. But right. It can still be delicious.
It can be delicious. Just
embrace it.
That's right. And that is that's the important, that's the most important part is it's delicious. Mm-hmm. You know, eat what is delicious, eat what you enjoy, eat what tastes awesome.
Right. And embrace the fact that, you know, vegetables and all these different cuts of meat that maybe you thought were weird before actually taste awesome when you prepare them correctly.
That's exactly right also. So we're going right on about an hour here. Lindsay, I just want to really tell you, I appreciate your time and you coming in and talking about your experience and your coaching and your cookbooks. Thank you very much for, you know, being here and being a part of this.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Last question. If there's a takeaway for my audience, something that you have to offer, something that you haven't got to say, or something that you want to, you know, people must know that are living this lifestyle, what would that be?
Well, one thing that we haven't really gotten to talk about yet, but that is really super important, and I was thinking about it when we were talking about, you know, the cravings and the food addiction, is that it's pretty easy to get a list of food and say, okay, these are the foods I eat and these are the foods I don't eat. These are the foods I choose to eat. These are the foods I choose not to eat. But the food you put in your mouth is really only such, it's only one component of health. And it's tied in my mind along with sleep and stress management. So I never encourage people to just make diet and looking at the big picture. So I always, because I want people to be living their healthiest, happiest, fullest lives, I don't think you can do that if you just change your food and you don't also think about how you're caring for yourself in other ways. So because I do see food very much as an act of self-care, I also want people to be taking care of themselves by getting enough sleep, turning their face to the sun, eliminating stress wherever possible. And I don't want to, you know, be piling on the list and making it even more stressful. Like, oh, it's not enough that you're eating healthy. You also have to be sleeping. But what I want people to see is that when you're taking care of yourself, you deserve to be taking care of yourself in this more holistic way. And so as long as you're doing the work to be changing your food and be making these positive changes, support your dietary changes, actually sleeping more and managing your stress will make it easier to continue to make the choices with your food that you know are better for your health. You know, it's harder to make good food choices, you know, the food choices that you want to be making when you're exhausted, when you're stressed, when you're unhappy in other ways, when you're, you know, deficient in vitamin D, is you're not going to feel as well as you can. So I really want to help people to take this bigger picture approach to health and to see how food fits in with the other pieces and to really manage them all holistically so that they can really be moving towards like the life that they ultimately want to be leading.
That's awesome, Lindsay. I really appreciate you saying that. I find that when people start on this process, they start sleeping a little bit better and then they want to do a deep dive in how can I even sleep better? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they have so much energy that like, well, what do I do with my energy? And I say, have you tried exercise?
Right.
Just go for a walk, you know? And then later I really promote meditation. Mm-hmm. I think for every single, for your mind, for your body, for your health, for everything, meditation is key. And I don't know any really successful person that doesn't have a meditation practice.
100%. And making a positive change in one area, like you're saying, really encourages and promotes positive changes in other areas. So at first, although when you're standing kind of at the bottom of the mountain, it can look very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You're really not at the bottom of a mountain. You're actually kind of going downhill because once you start to build that momentum, it can really take off, but you just have to start making those first few steps. And you really want to be making steps in different areas because the ball just starts rolling faster and faster and gets bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden you realize how much better you're feeling, and you weren't even, I mean, it's just a completely different experience when you can kind of, of making yourself feel as good as possible.
Right on. Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh, again, thank you for being on Mountain Man Nutrition Podcast, Lindsay. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition again. And if you like the podcast you just heard, tell a friend. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on Twitter, wherever you can share it, tell somebody who can benefit from it, because that's why I'm here and that's why I'm doing this podcast, is to benefit as many people as possible. Millions and millions of Americans have suffered from type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and continue to suffer. So if we can benefit them in any way, shape, or form with this podcast, I want to do that. So please share it with your friends. Get on iTunes and give me a 5-star rating if you liked it, 5 stars. And then write a little blog about it, or a little say something about it so other people can find it that you're not sharing it with. You know, the more people who listen, the more benefit we can do for others, and you can be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be part of that. So let's share this podcast as often as possible. Thank you very much, and good wishes to you.